Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hola.
Bonjour.
Ni hao.
Moi.
Privet.
Vityoi.
Ooh, new one.
From Belarus. Thank you, Alicia.
Welcome to the Normal, Not Normal podcast with me, Oliver Phelps.
And me, James Phelps. And guys, this episode is the last in the season. But do not worry, we will be back later on this year with more amazing guests.
Yes, as James said, we will be back later this year, but let's get too ahead of ourselves right now. Let's continue in the now.
Today we are joined by two guys that we know pretty well. Our guests today on this episode are Mina Lima, also known as Mirafora Mina and Eduardo Lima, who together, Mina Lima, they created the entire graphic style of all the Harry Potter films. So this covers the style of The Daily Prophet, The Marauder's Map, all the products in Weasley Wizard Weezers. But since all the Harry Potters, since then, they've been designing Diagon Alley at Universal Orlando Resort and the graphic props for Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, as well as all the films outside of the Potter world, including Sweeney Todd, The Golden Compass, The Imitation Game. They've also illustrated a beautiful collection of classic novels for HarperCollins.
Exactly, and we know that there's so many creative people who listen to the show, who send us ideas for artwork, who talk to us about drawing and stuff like that. So we're sure you're going to have an absolutely amazing time listening to what the guys have got to say.
Definitely. I should have shown my painting I've been doing during lockdown, although it would be a bit...
Go on then, go and get it.
There you go. It's a Bob Ross original.
A who?
There's this guy who used to paint back in the day. Well, I'm talking like 10, 20 years ago, called Bob Ross. And it was a very... I thoroughly recommend it to anybody. It's such a nice, chilled way to spend an afternoon. Follow along on YouTube when he's on different programs as well. But it's very... And there's no mistakes, just happy accidents when you're painting. So it's very therapeutic.
James, what have you been up to this past week? Have you been painting, did you say?
No, that's something I was doing during the January, February lockdown. So I've got a couple of them scattered around. But I've just signed up to a 30-mile paddle board. So about 50K.
What, in one go?
Over 2 days. So it's for the Movember charity. You know James Haskell? He was on our show a while ago.
Yep.
He knew that I like paddle boarding, so he literally rang me and was like, I'm doing this challenge with a couple of others. Do you want to come? So I was like, yeah, sure, why not? I only realised how...
That is a long way.
Yeah, it is. The thing is, it's in a canal. So it's a canal pretty much from between Basingstoke and Woking in the UK, in England. Fortunately, that means there's no current or anything like that. So hopefully I'll be back for the next season.
Via a tetanus shot probably at the end of it if you're going in the canal system.
Very much.
But so what day are you doing it on the day this goes out?
So the audio of this is on the Friday, so and the visual on the Monday the 17th. So I'll be starting on the 17th and the 18th. But it's going to be fun. I'm going to have a lot of good time. And again, it's raising money for the Movember charity and also to support mental health, especially among men, because let's face it, we don't talk that often about it. So, and I know there's guys who are doing it who have gone through testicular cancer and things like that. So that's a big thing that Movember helps support. Other guys are going through who have had mental health issues and things like that. So helping with that. And I just really want to help in any which way I can. And put my body through a lot of pain to do so, but I'm looking forward to it. It'll be a lot of good fun.
Exactly. And James, I think you should I think it's a perfect example for you to wear a bit of normal, not normal merch while doing it.
I think I definitely will be at some point, that's for
maybe
sure.
Maybe a did you know shirt.
A did you know shirt. Did you know this was a good idea a couple of weeks ago, I think will be the...
Yeah, just do that.
The tag for it, but I'm excited for it, so I'm sure I'll be putting that up on my Instagram and all that kind of stuff. But Oliver, what have you been up to?
I have been, so I've had this cabin built in the back garden. The owls, by the way, you know the plastic owls I got?
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, one of them is doing the business. He's keeping all the birds away from that part of the garden. The other one, right slacker, they don't pay any attention to him. I swear I saw a pigeon sitting on it the other day.
I told you it wasn't any good.
No, but it's silly, because the one does very well. The other one just doesn't want to know.
Well, I was thinking, why don't you get a statue of a cat? Because birds don't like cats, do they? Surely that would be more effective.
Right, there's a cat what keeps coming in the garden. It's really annoying.
Oh, you said the one that
yeah,
brings
yeah,
you joy.
Craps on the floor. Yeah, not very good. Anyway, forget about that. So I've had this cabin put at the far end of the garden. And so it's doubling up as a gym. So I've put some weights in it and stuff like that. And you know when you buy stuff online and it's not quite what it says on the tin? Well, it said it's a multi-workout bench, right? So you can do like bench press, you can do flies, you can do leg extensions, you can do preach curls on it. No, you can't. Right, so it's got these things. They're kind of like arms that stick out on the side of this bench. So you're supposed to apparently use those to do fly curls if you want to. Fine in theory, maybe if you're about 5 foot tall. If you're 6'3" like myself, no way are you doing it. Also as well, if you're actually bench pressing, the design of this thing stops the bench from coming anywhere near your chest, so you can't get a full rep out of it. Terrible idea. Then the worst design I think I've ever seen of anything in my life is the leg extension, right? Where you've got to put you've put your leg at the end of the bench, obviously, and you've got this extension that goes onto it. And to weight it up, you put the weight plates on the front of it. Fine, in theory. Until you actually extend your leg. Then you have said plate smacking into your leg. You've got 60, 70 kilos bouncing onto your shin. Not the best design in the world. So I think that will be going back very, very soon. I nearly went on a rant there, but I don't quite have my official normal, not normal rant back to hand. So I refrained it.
Well done. Well, we can all pray that gets resolved soon, Oliver, because I'm sure everyone will be very worried.
I mean, I'm sure there's other people going on with problems just as difficult as mine right now.
Maybe, but I tell you what, put that on hold, because now I want to get dived into our conversation with Mina Lima. Everybody, please welcome our guests, Mira Mina and Eduardo Lima. Guys, thank you so much for joining us today. We're very excited to have you on. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure to be with you again. It's always good fun. Looking forward to this.
No, we love hanging out with you guys. And yeah, and as Miro was saying before we recorded, that it's nice to not be running around giving talks and in events. And so we can have a nice chat. And yeah, so thank you very much for the invite.
You won't see Oliver raiding the green room either.
Yes.
Look, people leave stuff there. It might as well be taken. I'm one of those people, it's like in hotel rooms if there's like the little mini stuff. Anyway, this conversation starts off pretty wild. But guys, I just want to say as well, I feel really, I'm just looking at your background and all your amazing artwork there, and I'm feeling like I really should have done more of an effort than just having a white screen behind me. So it looks really cool. You showing off your work in the background as well.
Well, we can Photoshop that for you later.
That'll be even better, yeah.
We have been slightly responsible for creating your bits of graphics and stuff, so why not, continue now? We
could... Yeah.
Definitely. Well, if we could start then, would you be able to describe what your role is in the film industry? And like you say that with Laura and myself in The Potters, can you describe what your roles are?
Oh, yeah. It's funny because we've just this year, Eduardo and I sort of have a celebrating 20 years of working together, and it just has gone by so quickly. And you just always feel like each job is new and fresh and I've just come into it. But actually, when you stop and analyze what this job is, it's kind of a weird one, because 20 years ago, not many people were doing graphic design for film, because it wasn't really an official role listed in the credits of a film, but one that became evidently needed through the art department. So what that graphic design for film is really is creating any prop or decorative element for the film sets that has typography, pattern, illustration, signage, all the graphic elements that come together to either create the particular story that's happening at that moment or to shape the history of that moment. So if you're walking down a street, then you need the audience to understand where you are, why you're there, what's been going on before that moment. So quite often we feel like we're mini visual historians trying to sort of put the top layer, if you like, on top of the brilliant sets that have already been built and designed by the rest of the art department and construction.
But as a good example, what we've done for the film was the Marauders map that you guys kindly gave to Harry. And
selflessly.
Yes, and the Daily Prophet, all the chocolate frogs and all the school books. And of course, our favorite set that we worked was the Weasley's shop. And that was Nomura.
Yeah, that's a good example, not just because of the present company, but also because that's a case in point where a graphic designer, regardless who it is, has to think about who and why and the moment that they're trying to describe. That actually we had longer than any other scene on screen, maybe a minute and a half of screen time to tell that story. But we actually got that quite wrong the first time because we loved designing packaging. When Stuart Craig said, here's the set, fill it with product, we were kind of like, wow, that's, you know, lots of beautiful opportunity to create beautiful packaging. But it was too nice and I'm really sorry. But we realized that two teenage boys who just wanted to sell as much crap as possible, in the craftiest way possible, would not be spending a lot of time sort of figuring out the typography and layout.
Or make everything, every beautiful packaging gorgeous with ribbons and stuff.
So we went back to the drawing board and thought, we need to make this more. I think Stuart even used the word vulgar. So again, it's about sort of harnessing the, you know, your characters and how best to imagine how you would have created that product to sell it to as much as possible to all your mates and rip them off and all those little things that are the psychology, if you like, behind a moment.
And sometimes when we are creating props for the films, we have to think, as Mira just said, that we have to think about how the character would think. So some days we were Snape, other days we were Dumbledore, other days we were McGonagall and Weasley. So you have to really think about what the character would do and how they would think and how is their handwriting, what is their objects, how they hold the pen and things like that. So it's incredible. So it's quite a lot of things that have to think before we start doing design.
I mean, it doesn't mean that we'd make great actors, though.
No, yeah.
We just get into character for graphics. We draw the line there.
No, exactly. Yeah, but would it be quite nice if we were like doing Snape's props, dressing as Snape or the Weasleys.
Actually, back at you guys, do you think that that's how you would have designed, like, those products when you went into that shop for the first time? I don't think we've ever asked you that. Like, did you feel like, oh yeah, this is like, or were you like, God, I wish there was a so-and-so? Or
there was, actually, now you mention it, I always remember on the fifth film when we first saw the Skyven Snackbox for the first time, and a bit like you saying, like, how it looked like it had been rushed out, as it were. Like, literally, like, they got a massive paintbrush and just slapped green and purple paint on it. And then, as you say, when we went to the joke shop, I remember being in there and thinking there was some amazing artwork on there, like, where they'd done... I remember there being a Pimp My Broomstick play on the old Pimp My Ride program. That was on, like, the upper level. And then so some of the stuff, which was obviously dedicated to more, like, the pimple cream and stuff like that, looked a bit more feminine. And then... So I think that's definitely how Fred and George operate. They definitely try and cater to one market and then really stereotype at that market, right? So it's a pimple cream, so it has to be more feminine, as it were, at the moment. And then it goes to, say, anything from like the Skyven snack boxes or like the puking pastels with that. And I think that type of colouring especially, that all goes together with it. So I think it's, yeah, I remember standing in and that was definitely my favourite set to be on, because not only because it was just for our characters as well, but the amount of colour in it, and we could have spent hours looking around at every little nook and cranny where there was... I mean, the one thing I've actually got in my house is I took one of the bags. I literally went, right, I've got a jacket, I can put it underneath and go, because they weren't giving anything away. But even that, like, even if you look at the bag, it looks handmade. It looks like they haven't obviously gone to some massive printers to get it all made. They've literally gone, as you say, how can we rip everyone off as quick as possible?
I think the Weasley twins are sort of like the classic definition of disruptors, you know, not like, you know, even in business. People talk about that now, and actually it brings back to the whole sort of not normal thing as well, because it's sort of like, you know, what are your expectations and how can we just turn that all on its head and still make a success of it, because it's our voice. And I think if it's the character's voice that's true, and in the same way you can apply that to designing too, you know, if your voice is true, then you will make a success of the creation that you've chosen. It doesn't have to follow any any expectations, really.
But Oliver, what you just said about the colors as well, and that was quite important because Diagon Isle has just been destroyed, you know, by the Dementors, and it was a horrible moment. And suddenly this beautiful, crazy orange, purple building appear. And it goes absolutely against the norm of Diagon Alley as well. No? Mm. And but that is a very special moment that brings more hope and more fun things for the Wizarding World after what just happened as well.
I remember it was probably the only set where every student who was inside, in between takes, didn't want to leave the set. They wanted to still look around because the detail that you guys had put into all the props was so strong.
It's such a shame that we never really record the meetings that we were having at the art department to talk about products and how we were going to dress the shop. It was hilarious, like with Stephanie McMillan on the set decorator and Stuart and
the team. But quite serious faces, I think.
But yeah, we were all very serious. And
because don't forget, I think only a handful of things were actually listed as products in the books, because you wouldn't waste all that time on a page to list every single product. That's kind of up to filmmakers to come up with, but they did have to be invented. So but much like creating a real store, you always need to put a logic behind everything. So we would be like, well, what are the different departments? We had the explosive department, we had the muggle magic, the more female decorative makeup department. Yeah. So there were different departments, and then that helped us kind of figure out a logic to, so behind all of that madness is always a logic behind every bit of
and I think I did, even for fun, I did like a spreadsheet, like with because we had to have prices for each product, and we knew how many products we have for each product, so I think I did for fun, like how many boxes of rubber chicken or gamba chameleon or the
well
the,
like a stock list
but after I did, like, let's see how much money we're gonna make here, and then you guys were rich because Harry was investing. Now he invested the money in a shop, so let's see if Harry's gonna make some money here. And yes, I'm sure everyone was happy, all the shareholders.
Since it's from a book, have other like interpretations been different from your own?
Well, the funny thing is, when we were sort of referring to the original book to seek extra information, and quite often it wasn't there because J.K. Rowling's so good at keeping the descriptions to a minimum to allow your imagination to kind of run wild. And so things like the Marauder's Map and the Daily Prophet and some of the key books that were mentioned were sort of lacking, if you like, in description in the book. But it was brilliant because it gave us complete kind of license to reimagine how that might be, and it wasn't necessarily a right or wrong, it was just our interpretation. Yeah. And of course now, 20 years later, I think if you say to someone Marauder's Map, they tend to bring up in their mind the one that they've seen in the film, and often we've met fans at the conventions and stuff who kind of say, that's just how I imagined it in the book, and you're like, well, that's impossible, but thank you.
It must be incredible when you see people have like tattoos of your work as well.
Yes. Have you got one? I hope you've got
one. I've got a sleeve just like that. So it must be a really inspiring thing to be able to see that your output, your creative output, has had such an influence on people.
It never ceases to kind of amaze and humble that obviously the best feeling is when you've inspired someone to actually be creative in their own way themselves. So if someone says, oh, I chose to go into graphic design yeah. or to film because of the combination of things that I saw in those films that you did, then that's just, you know, even if it's just one person that tells you that feels truly great. I think the tattoos are a bit scary, to be honest. I mean, I think it's amazing that I just, you know, you're designing something for one purpose and then it kind of veers off into
different. The first time we saw someone with like a lot of tattoo was in Orlando at the celebration. I think one of the first two celebrations. Mm-hmm. And this boy, he had like the two legs covered in Marauder's Map. Complete, like from all the legs, and I said, "Oh my god, it looked amazing!" But like, it was
Are you sure he wasn't wearing leggings?
No, it was proper.
Yeah. So I remember you guys telling us a story, and hopefully you can tell us one again, but of creative differences, shall we say? But as I know, there was a story once where it was a beautiful lady for an advert.
It was always a little bit of a struggle for everyone. I struggled to do muggle stuff. No one wanted to do any muggle stuff.
Do they know what muggles are?
I'm sure the magician will mind that. No wizard.
We've heard of it. Yeah.
So every time there was anything to do with Muggle, everyone was, I think even you guys, all the actors, and everyone was, oh God, Muggles, that's boring. And the same was with that big billboard, because it was such like a funny scene where Dumbledore is waiting Harry, in the cafe. So we had to invent this. I think it was in the script, the perfume ad. But we had to invent the name of the perfume. And of course, for films, we have to clear every single thing. No, you have to find out if there's a name that is available for perfume. So that was already the beginning of the problem. We couldn't find an available name for perfume. So we had to clear over 150 names, and they all came back. Now they're somewhere in the world that's already had that name for a perfume. So the name at the end was Divine Magic, was a little bit weird, but after was the to choose the model to be on that billboard, it took like 6 months of like discussions and meetings, and
because everyone's got a different idea of what
and but I think at the end was because it was a Muggle thing. I think everyone was, oh God, this Muggle is so annoying.
And actually, in a funny way, that's a good reminder of how, because we're all dealing with Muggle stuff all the time, wherever you go, you're sort of I'm using that as an adjective as though it's a completely normal thing. Muggle, everyone has an opinion, but with anything magical in terms of design, quite often people defer to us to just like, well, that's your world, we'll entrust you to get on with that, which was great, but also it's this huge freedom to kind of come up with a language, if you like, to bring J.K. Rowling's words into life. Yeah.
Because the difference with, of course, Fantastic Beasts, we are a lot in the Muggle world. Now, we don't see too many wizarding locations, but the Muggle world is 1926 in Paris, 1927 in New York. So it's much nicer to represent that world, because the research and trying to homage all those beautiful artists that were doing all these amazing posters, just, Art Nouveau, Art Deco. Much better, yeah. Nowadays, the Muggle, the graphics outside in the Muggle shops is a bit, not as interesting as before.
Say now, like, you guys started 20 years ago working on the Potters. Can you explain how you guys met?
So Mira did the first film, and I'm from Brazil, so I was moving to London in 2001, and through a mutual friend, I got Mira's contact. So I wrote her a letter asking to meet her, and she very kindly like replied straight away and said that she just finished Harry Potter 1, and she was going to start Harry Potter 2, and if I would like to come to Lisbon when she started to meet. And so I went there in September, I think. And I managed to squeeze a 1 week work experience that becomes two, that becomes three months, and I never left. So on Harry Potter 3, I became part of the team from the beginning, and that was 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, it says like all your Harry Potter works. What would you be able to pick, say, one particular thing out of all the hundreds and hundreds of things that you designed? Is there one thing that always stands out in your head and thinking that was my favorite piece? Or is there, on the flip side of it, is there anything else that you'd go back to and just tweak slightly if you were given the chance to again?
Oh my God, Oliver, I got in trouble once again in Orlando at the celebration. I think someone asked me that question, and I said, oh, I would love to go back and change the pumpkin juice label, because I think that was the first thing that I did on Harry Potter. And everyone was so quiet, no one... was like mute like for 3 minutes, and after people came like, why you said that? Why you don't like the pumpkin juice? You
are not allowed to. Pumpkin juice.
She said, you are not allowed to say that. And they said, I'm sorry.
So we've stopped saying we.
Yeah.
Especially in Orlando, where they're selling it as well.
Exactly. as you know, now creative people, we are never really 100% happy with any design we do. If we could go back and tweak and and change a little bit here and there, we would. But I did that as well with the pumpkin juice for Fantastic Beasts. We create a new pumpkin juice label that I.
So you got your way in the end.
Yes,
you got your way.
Well, I suppose that works in though, doesn't it? Because you can use that as the original brand, as it were.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then now it's being reinvented for the modern time. Yeah.
But my favorite thing, I always say that is the Daily Prophet, because it was an amazing prop to kind of punctuate the story And you always go back to the Daily Prophet to kind of highlight a special moment or something that was really bad happening in the wizarding world. But the main thing that I like about the Daily Prophet that was not about the main headline. The main headline was given to us. But everything else that we had to invent to populate the page to make you believe that that was a newspaper. It's just when you kind of really get closer to the pages that, oh my God, this is a different world.
Yeah, because I remember the design of it as well. Because when we were obviously in the, I suppose the Daily Prophet, we really only came with it when we were in the boroughs and it would be on the table or something like that. So you'd read, as you say, like you got like the main headline, which would sometimes have like a green covering on it because they'd put
the moving picture
on secondary. But yeah, like how obviously the text went, obviously, as we know, to read it from left to right, then it would go down to up and then almost like to fill the page up with it. But I remember one article, and I'm sure it was about like the port key was on strike or something like that. It was obviously a play on the tube, on the underground strike or something like that. And there was something in the Wizarding World that was going on.
Quite often the stories would be topical or, you know, to what was going on, in either our real worlds or... In, for example, when we did the Daily Prophet and the New York Ghost for the Fantastic Beasts in the 20s, we looked at stories that were relevant for the time, you know, and then twisted them into our magical, sort of shoehorn them into a magical context of politics or culture or, you know, sport even. I think
Sport. No, there was all the sections that you would see in a normal newspaper, on a mago newspaper. Yeah. You would.
We love, I know that as actors, we absolutely loved it because it was something to like genuinely get your teeth into when you're sitting there, but either before the scene starts or in between setups or whatever. But it was also always great because I know you guys would always put people from the crew names in there.
But shameless, my name is everywhere on a Daily Prophet. So someone said, why you put your name everywhere? And I said, well, why not?
Why not? Exactly. Wouldn't you?
I am the chief editor of the Daily Prophet. And without even knowing Omir, like we started like... As a joke, we made up a headline about a crazy ginger witch that does lots of mischiefs around the world. And that became like a thing.
No. I think someone even opened a Twitter account for her.
But we had to reveal the real identity of the ginger witch. And it was kind of like a homage to a friend of us that she worked in the set decorating team, Debbie. And she keeps like, she nearly sent me a message like every week. She said, what crazy things the ginger witch is doing this week.
She's in and out of Azkaban a couple of times, actually.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hello for the last time this season. It's that bit of the show where we share your messages, questions, and did you knows.
It is indeed. And the first question says, Guten Tag, James and Oliver. I'm Jeanette from Germany and I'm a huge fan. I want to ask you if you like the fashion styles of Fred and George and would you dye your hair again?
Did they have fashion styles? Well, yeah, in the end they did, didn't they? I mean, those suits in the 6th and 7th and 8th movie were very dapper.
Pretty suave, weren't they? It was suave, yeah.
So I'll go with that. Would I dye my hair again? Probably not, unless it was for a job. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, I think I'd dye. I probably wouldn't dye it bright ginger again. I like the odd highlight in there.
Is that to hide natural colours coming through?
I think that's it. I think that's if I, in the coming years, I probably will start to get a few natural tinges coming through. So yeah, maybe a bit of blonde coming in or something like that. Maybe I've done it before and I was quite happy with it. Sun-kissed look, I believe it's called. But actually, right, I'm playing in a golf tournament in a couple of weeks' time at my golf club, and they have to, you divvy it up, it's called the Quad Nations, it's England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, and I've been drafted in to play for Scotland.
What?
And I said to the guys, why Scotland? And they said, well, Hogwarts is in Scotland, you can play for Scotland. I think really Scotland was down on people, but anyway, so I'm playing for Scotland now in there, and I've got a tartan hat with the ginger hair coming out the bottom, so there almost is a bit of a Weasley-esque look to that, but it's not quite dyeing your hair, is it?
Very good. Our next one is a voice note from Regina.
Hello guys, hope you're doing very, very well. My name is Regina, I'm from Brazil, and I would like to know, since I'm a very big fan of cartoons, what were your favorite cartoons when you were growing up? Mine were The Care Bears Family, Wildfire, and The Get Along Gang. Thank you, love you guys.
Regina, I know that this doesn't help anybody who's listening right now, but your hair looks absolutely incredible in that video. It's all braided into amazing colours. So anyway, going back to the question on favourite cartoons, there was a few, I suppose. I mean, the one that I still watch now very, very happily is The Simpsons. Ren and Stimpy, Doug Funny, Rocco's Modern Life. So quite a few Nickelodeon shows really there. But yeah, they were kind of it. And I suppose as well, certainly the last two with Rocco and Ren and Stimpy, that probably explains my very warped sense of humour as well.
I would say that I would go, definitely, well, growing up, obviously, we'll go for all those that Oliver has said. Obviously, we were watching TV at the same time. But also go with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yes.
Or Hero Turtles in the UK. Did you know, random fact, they weren't allowed to be called ninjas because that was deemed violent.
Too aggressive.
Also, I would say the Ghostbusters.
Yes.
Yep. Gotta go Ghostbusters. Yes. Hey Arnold. And I would go for South Park. I know that's a bit more of an older version cartoon, but Simpsons and South Park, I quote them at least twice a day each. But thank you very much for that, Regina. It's lovely to hear from you. And yes, your hair is wicked. Our next message is from Chloe, and Chloe says, "Hi, James and Oliver. I hope you're both doing well and staying safe. I wanted to know, what's one scene from a movie or TV show that makes you laugh, no matter how many times you watch it?"
Okay, so I can think of a couple. TV, we're talking, there's an English sitcom called Only Fools and Horses, but there's the one scene, obviously, when Del Boy falls through the bar. That is just comedy genius 101 right there. And another one as well, and it's from The Wedding Singer, when Adam Sandler's character absolutely loses it, and he's just singing a song he's made up about an ex-girlfriend. And there's a cutaway, and it's John Lovitz, and he just says he's losing his mind and I'm making all the benefits, and this curtain just shuts very slowly in front of him, and it is absolute gold. Absolutely brilliant.
Very good. Going back to The Simpsons, there are many of those which always make me giggle and laugh. I would say there's a Homer one where he's, I think it's in a Halloween special one, and he says, "Oh, I've got a spare donut." He opens the box, "I've got a spare donut," and he gets it out, and there's a note from Homer, "I owe you a new donut, Homer." And he just says, "Bastard, always one step ahead."
Very good. Anyway, with all this reminiscing, we're going to move on. So this voice note comes from Anna.
"Hi, Oliver. Hi, James. My name's Anna, and I just wanted to say I've loved this podcast season so much. It's been great. Thank you so much for doing it. I thought a good question for the final episode would be, what has been your favourite part about doing this series? And yeah, I hope you're having a great day, great week, and thank you so much for doing this podcast. I've absolutely loved it."
Oh, thank you, Anna. That was lovely. Do you know what? I've really enjoyed doing this side of it as well, because obviously interviewing the guests and chats to their different experiences, no matter what, that's always been fascinating. I've always finished talking to people, learning a lot more than I thought I would. Even if I've read their autobiographies or whatever like that, I've still gone away learning even more. But doing this side of it as well, for again the audio side, the secret club, like we have this, and I've really enjoyed hearing all your did you knows, your facts. Anna, it's great to hear as well that you're really enjoying it as well, and you've really enjoyed the whole series. So I would say this side of it has been a lot of fun and probably the highlight for me.
Yeah, I think the highlight for me, Anna, would be the interaction with people and just hearing that we've totally, by chance, I suppose, brightened so many people's days and just given people almost not a kick at the backside to keep going, but just that comforting side of things as well. And it's amazing as well.
How can you go from not a kick at the backside to keep going, but a comforting side?
Well, do you know what I mean? A comforting nudge.
comforting prod.
Just to say that, you know, that like we got some amazing stories through where some people have had something really life-changing happen, and yet putting their earphones in and listening to the podcast or watching it just totally transported them away from whatever situation they are in at the moment. That side of things has been really, really nice to hear. Anyway, moving on to this week's and the last of the seasons, your Did You Knows, and the first one is a voice note from Sermia.
Hi James, hi Oliver. I've got a Did You Know for you today, and it is that, did you know that studies have shown that babies tend to stare at adults for a long time because they think they're beautiful? So if you ever had a kid or a baby stare at you, take it as a sign that they think you're good looking. Impressive, isn't it? Well, I hope you like that, and have a nice day.
What? Well, yeah, but what happens when they start crying? Whenever I normally hold a baby, 9 times out of 10, I get the grumpy look, like the hmm. Probably wondering who are you and why are you trying to get me to play fetch.
Maybe.
I imagine. But speaking of that, though, someone sent me a video of them playing fetch with their daughter the other day, and it definitely works.
How old was their daughter?
21. No, like 2.
Oh, right, okay. But that's good. I suppose that the next time we see any children, or especially babies, looking, I'll take that as a very, very big compliment.
Definitely. The next Did You Know is from the Philippines, from Lorelei. And Lorelei says, Hi, James and Oliver. I'm a huge fan of yours. Your podcast makes me smile, and I've learned a lot about anxiety through your podcast. Here's my Did You Know fact, and that is that the Canary Islands are named after dogs, not birds. And although it's off the coast of northwest Africa, the archipelago is actually part of Spain. In Spanish, the area's name is Isla Canarias, which comes from the Latin phrase Canaria Insula. I did not do Spanish or Latin at school. Which basically translates to Island of Dogs. Producer Alice has been doing a little digging into this, and she thinks, I'm going to blame this all on her, she believes that this is because of sea lions, or sea dogs, as the Romans used to call them. P.S. Hello here in the Philippines is Kamusta. I probably butchered 4 languages then.
Yes.
I'm really sorry if I offended you, if you speak Latin, if you speak Spanish, if you're from the Philippines, if you speak English. Basically, yeah. I apologise.
Exactly. Well, anyway, I'm going to save any embarrassment because I'm just going to introduce the next one, which is a voice note from Mackenzie.
James and Oliver Phelps, it's Mackenzie from Maryland, but I'm in Missouri right now for college. And my Did You Know fact was, did you know that turtles can breathe out of their butts? I thought that was one that you guys would like to hear and know. I love your guys' podcast. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep putting a smile on all of our faces every day. Have a great day.
Thank you very much for that, Mackenzie. I hope you're doing well at college there. What a great fact.
Yes.
In fact, can I just bring this back to the question we had earlier about favourite cartoons? Beavis and Butthead. Because as soon as I hear that fact, all I can think of is... Turtles breathing out their butts. Who would have known that?
Olaf.
Or do you... Yeah, well... Or do you think... One of them pumped once, and his mate was saying, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm just breathing out.
Potentially.
Mackenzie, that was the last Did You Know fan interaction of the series, so thank you very much for that.
Hang on. Celebratory. Whee! There we go. Anyway, so we asked a couple of weeks ago about these owls that I had in my back garden to deter these naughty pigeons coming in. Anyway, and we've had some amazing names come through, and... Here's one that's come through here. It says, Dear Oliver, I've come up with a couple of names for your owl, which is guarding your garden from pigeons. Since the owl is constantly vigilant about pigeons around, it can be called Alistair, as Alistair Moody in Harry Potter used to say, constant vigilance all the time. Or you could actually call it Mad-Eye. Hope you like it. Love the podcast. From Adripana in India.
That is that's a strong argument that you can't deny.
Good one, really, isn't it?
Tatty sends a message and she says, I have a name suggestion. Earl.
Earl. Strong name, that.
No reason given, just Earl. Thanks, Tatty.
yeah, I like that. Tatty, I think Earl's going to be the front runner at the moment. That sounds very good for one of them. Anyway, Sydney drops a message as well saying, I thought a good name for your owl would be Pigwidgeon, Amara or Zeppelin. I think going on a bit of a Potter theme there, Sydney, but all entries are welcome. Anyway, finally, to round off this season, the last listener messages.
Sorry. You can't leave us on suspense. You have 2 hours. What are you naming them?
Well, Earl.
Yep.
And...
I like Alistair. I think that was some great...
Alistair. Great Alistair and yeah. Earl. I think, okay. Alistair and Earl, it will be. Earl needs to pull his finger out, though. He fell over last night. Anyway, finally, to round off this season's last listener messages, here's another jingle from Vicky, who sent a brilliant one a few weeks back. Take it away, Vicky.
Oliver and James, they have a podcast, yes, called Normal Not Normal, the sequel to Double Trouble, if you like it, call it that, if not, it's quite alright. They feature special guests from idols, colleagues, mates, along with that it has a couple of rants here and there. Some did you know's my favourite part, the drawing from Japan. They inspire, they make you laugh, they're amazing, they melt your heart, so please like, subscribe, review, but leave your negativity aside. We want it to be a positive space for everyone in these uncertain times, yes. Keep smiling, everyone, keep being you. Don't let no other person bring you down, cause here's the truth. Someone out there really cares for you.
Vicky, thank you so much for sending in another jingle, because obviously you did one before what was the Get Ready for James's Did You Knows. Very, very impressive. But Vicky, and everybody else who sent a message in today, whether we got to read it out or not, we've seen them all and we really, really thoroughly appreciate all the input, what comes in from you guys.
But also what's been great, Oliver, is that the people, who not just humans who have been listening to the podcast either, is it? Rhi and Alex sent a little message that Homer the dog listens as well. And Homer, we know that you're not feeling very well at the moment. Just know we're sending our love to you. And thank you very much for being part of the Normal Not Normal family. It really is nice to hear that dogs too enjoy this. So thank you so much.
Actually, did Homer like the drum or not? He wasn't too impressed with it, was he?
No.
Okay, I'll stay quiet with the drum then.
So I like Homer.
So now, for the last time this season, back to the show. It wasn't just in the Wizarding world that you guys have designed books. Obviously, more recently, designing, illustrating editions of the Potter books with interactive pullouts and letters you can open and stuff like that. But you've also illustrated very classic books like Jungle Book, Wizard of Oz, Pinocchio.
I think the collection started because of Harry Potter somehow. Because again, when you start working with Harry Potter, even with the partners, not just the Warner Brothers at Leavesden, when you start working with some great licensees like HarperCollins and Noble Collection, Lego, you become, it's a huge family, and we want to make the fans happy. So our first book that we designed for the Muggle world was the film Wizardry with HarperCollins. And from that, the relationship with HarperCollins has been incredible. And they invite us to create a series of re-illustrated like classics like Peter Pan and Jungle Book. And that's how we started in 2016. So we are now on book number 8 with the
coming
Wizard.
Out,
yeah, we have one book coming out this year in September that is The Wizard of Oz. And we're already working for a new one for next year. So yeah, it's like Harry Potter. You go back to these amazing worlds and try to give a new life.
Yeah.
I was going to say, would you say that your style has changed over time, and like the techniques or anything like that, especially in going to reimagining these classic stories? Like, does your childhood memory of reading the books or anything like that, does that seep into any design elements to it as well?
I guess at the core of our studio style is a kind of, for want of a better word, vintage kind of period styles that inform how we, it draws us to our attention, which is why it was so great working on the Fantastic Beasts films. But of course, when you're designing props, you're all the time trying not to be us as designers. And I know it's interesting because people say, oh, we can see your style, but you're trying not to have a style because you might need to be the Weasley twins, or you might need to be Snape's handwriting, or you might need to be Umbridge or Russian constructivist propaganda piece. You know, so it's, you might be lots of different styles that you're almost sort of so objective in, rather than putting your signature style. So actually designing the books was and our sort of range of prints as well has been a real, like, it was almost like a breath of fresh air that after having always worked for someone else's for all these other characters that were demanding our attention, to then kind of go, well, what would we do actually as Mira and Eduardo as a studio? And that's when we founded the studio in 2010, in order to do that, to just have some work that wasn't necessarily film. And so, and we were rather smugly thought, well, we know how to do books because we've done all those books for films. But of course, when you do a book for a film, you might make four copies of The Beadle, the Bard.
And you can be very indulgent. You can spend quite a lot of money making everything look amazing.
And you don't need to have a logic to the book. We talked about logic before, but it, you can just repeat the pages and stuff. So suddenly we realized there was a little bit of a science to creating a book, but it's not so complicated that we couldn't take it on. And now we've suddenly found ourselves with this kind of battery of loads of books,
and I think
came kind of full circle with Harry Potter.
So bringing on to that then, could you tell us about the house of Nina Lima?
We're very, very happy in our house, aren't we? We're actually talking to you from the top floor. We've finally got our own office, which is very grown up after all this time. We had this dream. I think sometimes, you know, when you sort of dream and you talk about something enough, it kind of just comes together. And that sounds a bit hippie, but it's actually we used to joke about having a studio when we were at Leavesden doing the Harry Potter films. And then we did find a studio 10 years ago.
Usually what happens, you finish a film and you have to find a new film. So when the last Harry Potter was happening, me and Mira, we like, and what's going to happen now? We can't just separate and go and do different films. So we, from that day, we needed to be together forever, basically.
Fairly quickly, we found ourselves with a little tiny studio up the road in Fitzrovia. And then we found ourselves with a house of Mina Lima, which was really a building that could kind of be home to this collection of work, both the Harry Potter work and everything we'd done since we left.
Yeah.
And we wanted it to feel like a home. And that's very much why it was called House of Mina Lima, because it was a sort of mixing, obviously, a brand with the idea of you've come home, some nostalgia, which we learnt is what makes people tick with the Harry Potter stories, the films, the books, everything, is that they kind of feel like they've come home when they share those experiences. So now we've got the House of Mina Lima gallery and shop on the ground floor and basement, and above that is our studio. And we like to feel that all the creativity is contained in this one building, and it's sort of dynamic. So we can, after we finish this call, we can just pop down and meet people in the shop, and if they come back from this pandemic.
And the great thing also that we are spreading as well, House of Mina Lima. We have one in...
I was going to say, because you're not just... Now you can almost say the House of Mina Lima, London and New York.
And Osaka.
Andrew Saka. Yeah.
No, we used to dream, would it be cool to have a bag with House of Mina Lima? Do you know when they have like London, Paris, Amsterdam, Berlin? So we're getting there. So
typically, we were thinking about the graphic prop of before. This business rather than actually the ramifications of opening around the world.
I've visited you guys in your London towers, shall I say, and it really is. I'm not just saying it to you guys; it's definitely a must if you're visiting London. Is a not just for a Harry Potter fan, but an artistic fan as well, and someone who just appreciates great work.
Thank you.
Like you say, the attention to detail. Because I think I came with my pal who's never seen a Potter film.
What?
But yeah. But he was just blown away by the amount of detail. And it's one thing to say to someone, like when we're filming, the details which you may miss the first time round were fantastic. But when you actually come and see it like face to face, it really does stand out even more.
Now, what was great that was happening previously on the old shop and now here as well is loads of young people that is their first experience going to a gallery, to going to see art and to fall in love with graphics. So this is happening every day, and it's something that is really, really special for me and Mira. We get very emotional when we go downstairs and we see kids even drawing with a notebook and drawing the things that they are seeing in the gallery. It's amazing.
What would 10-year-old Eduardo and 10-year-old Mira, what would they think of your lives, your jobs, everything going on right now?
When I was 10 years old, instead of being playing football with my brother outside, I was inside drawing, creating worlds, pretending that I have a shop, and I had like little receipts, I had little bags, I had little packaging, and my brother used to get really annoyed with me because he wanted, of course, me outside playing football, and no, sorry, I'm here creating, writing, drawing, and Mira said, oh my god, I was doing the same. So we were already kind of plotting graphic props without we know each other. So I think my 10-year-old would be like, oh my God, you are doing exactly what I was. So well done, mate. You followed through your dream and you are doing exactly what we were dreaming at when we were 10 years old.
Yeah, it's an unconventional path, I'd say.
Yeah.
But I couldn't have imagined it being any other, you know, certainly as a convention was not part of the plan.
Yes.
So, yeah.
But it is funny how things also change as well, because I knew from when I was, I don't know, 5, 6 years old, I knew that I was going to live abroad, that unfortunately Brazil was not going to be my thing, because I was always fascinated about filmmaking and I thought that I was going to be the new Steven Spielberg. And because, of course, I loved E.T. and I love all those kind of things at that time. And I said, I want to be a film director. But it was when I find out more about other things that you can do in film, in the film, and graphics was something that I was always very interested in, because I was already doing the graphic props. So to have that combination, working films with graphics, is a jackpot for me, basically.
So I know we've mentioned the word quite a lot today, but what does normal mean to you?
Well, it's funny, when you invited us to do this podcast and with the title, I realized that the word normal sort of had slightly negative connotations in our yeah. kind of psyche. And I was like, why is that? Because it's not fair, really. And so I looked up the Oxford Dictionary definition of normal, just out of curiosity. And I think it says something like, it has the word conform and standard and expected and all those words that actually, they are things that we don't kind of relate to and have never been part of our lexicon, if you like, as a team, because the reason we're here today is because of our sort of union, a creative union. And I think from the outset, and Harry Potter, of course, gave us that opportunity to do that, but from the outset, creatively, we've always sort of wanted to just slightly push the boundary of what was expected. And so that seems to be everything we do. We're certainly, the decisions that we make are never like, well, that's in fashion at the moment, or, you know, that's a style that we should pursue. And it turns out that it's okay to do that.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes it takes a while to realize that, but everything we've done as a studio has been because of, we love doing it. And I do think that that's at the center of our normal.
Yeah, going a little bit more in a different route, like being gay, like I remember very, very well when I was maybe 12 or 13, reading again in a dictionary what homosexual was, and basically said it's not a normal thing, and is like a mental disease and whatever. That was in any dictionary until 1995, I think, when they changed the definition and said it was not a disease anymore. So yeah, it's not a really nice thing to read when you are 13 and said that you are not normal, that there's something wrong with you. And I remember was only when I moved to London in 1997, I stayed here for a couple of years and went back again, I realized that was absolutely normal to be whatever you wanted to be, because it's you. You don't need to worry about anything else. It's whatever is... it makes you happy. Is how. So when I arrive here, and of course walking in Soho, like, oh my God, it's normal.
You're gonna choose somewhere to walk. Yeah. And then, so what would be the most normal thing about you?
The normal for me is always have a good humor, and we always laugh. It's not normal for us to not be happy with each other, and if we have a day that we are a little bit weird with, that is horrible, and we want to get this out of the way straight away. It's like 20 years that have been worked together, and there is not one single day that we haven't spoken to each other. So
I'll start crying.
You know, so that is the normal.
That's the normal thing.
That's the normal. Fantastic.
Well, I was going to say, what's the follow-up to that would be, what is the least normal thing? But I think you just answered it then.
Yes.
I think the older you get as well, you sort of think, you know, why not just try and smile or laugh at least once a day? Even, you know, sometimes when I go to sleep, actually the last thing I try and do is smile as I'm going to sleep, which is really weird, but that's kind of like, I've just decided that's probably a good thing. I don't know whether it's a science yet, but I'll let you know.
It must help. If I could just finish with something that we call the 3 a.m. questions. Basically, the right answer comes at 3 a.m. when you can't sleep. So it's quick fire. What is your favorite food?
Japanese.
Any sweet cakes. Love cakes. And of course, Brazilian food. I'm sorry, but yeah. Yeah.
What is your favorite book?
I love Call Me By Your Name.
Cloud Atlas. David Mitchell.
Very good. Your favorite film?
There's hundreds, but I think I remember one film that really, really changed my life was Cinema Paradiso, the Italian film that is all about filmmaking and this boy that is in love with film being projected. And of course, E.T. as well was a very important film in my life at the beginning because I was 100% sure I was going to be the next Steven Spielberg.
Or you thought you were going to be an alien.
Or an alien, yeah. No, I am an alien.
The next E.T.
I want to be like Steven Spielberg, but like every single boy at that time as well, they all want to be Steven Spielberg. No, so.
Does Mad Men count?
I'll let that. If you watch it in one go.
TV and cinema seems to be kind of merging right now, so I'm sorry, but I have.
Yeah, that's fine. Your favorite songs?
I'm still trapped in the past a bit. I love, being gay and I remember the first artist that I fall in love completely was Madonna in 1985. I was 11 years old and said, "What is this?" And I absolutely adore her. And so any Madonna song for me makes me happy, and I love it.
I'm also a bit old-fashioned, but in a different way. So I think it's going to be Space Oddity, Bowie.
Right, yeah. I'm definitely one of those people where someone says, "Oh, this is such an artist on the radio." I'm like, I have no idea who.
Don't ask me anything about the new music that's happening now. I'm still very trapped in the 80s and the 90s.
But lots of storytelling as well in those songs.
So yes.
That's probably why.
Yeah. Mm. And finally, what is your favorite quotes?
Everything you can imagine is real. And also another one that I love, it takes a long time to become young.
I think they'll like that one.
That's good. I like that one.
And they're both from Picasso. And it's amazing.
Oh. Bit of a sort of relating to everything that we've said today, is sort of choose, I don't know exactly how it goes, choose a job that you love and you'll never do a day's work in your life.
Hmm. Well, you guys definitely you definitely live by your quotes, that's for sure. and it proves that it works as well.
Yeah, so maybe we can make it a science, you know. Yeah.
Exactly.
I think it's exactly that. But guys, thank you so much for telling us so many amazing stories and insights into your world. And I think just proving, now this is our last show of this season, and I think you guys have kind of summed it all up, that like normality is what you perceive it to be yourself. Thank you so much for just topping off this season in the best possible way.
Oh, thank Fantastic. You so much for inviting us. It's always a joy. And come and see us soon at the house.
And what an honor to close the season. So yes, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much again.
I think I'm going to be trying that a lot more often now when I go to bed. Just smiling.
Probably if you're sharing your room with somebody, maybe tell them you're going to do that beforehand in case like the moonlight shines through and you're just there smiling.
Yeah. That could be a bit awkward, wouldn't it? Look over. Oh, dear. As I say, the team, the guys there from Mina Lima, just absolutely amazing chatter to them both. And I think the one thing that just comes across is just their passion, their gift, their talent with so many people. And I think that's just so admirable.
I thoroughly recommend it. If you're ever in Osaka, New York, London, go to the house of Mina Lima and just see their amazing work. Mm-hmm. And especially if they're there. So you'll probably more than likely see them in the London store. But definitely go, because they've always got time to speak to anybody. And I thoroughly, thoroughly recommend it. A great way, I think, the best way to describe and just show how much detail they put in to any kind of graphic design that they put into film or anything like that. Anyone that owns a Marauder's map, which is
huge,
like it's quite cool, it's quite a big thing, and it is huge when you bring it out completely. The detail in that does not end. It may be in the very middle or on the front, but that detail is continuation throughout, and that just shows how much detail goes into it, even though it's probably never going to be on camera, but it's there.
Yeah.
And so that's just a shining example of how much work they put in.
Yeah, I mean, I always remember when we were doing the Quidditch World Cup scenes and having the Quidditch World Cup programmes. And that was exactly like it. They had inside of the Quidditch World Cup program. Now, you would never see this while filming, or, you know, from the viewer's point of view. But you opened up the program, and inside they had, obviously, the World Cup standings, who was going, like the route to the final, as it were, how the Bulgarians were playing, who the best player in the Irish team was playing, and stuff like that. I actually learned probably a lot more about the whole Quidditch side of things from just their input than many... You know, than a lot of other ways around doing it. Obviously, at the time there was only so much information available through the books, but to be able to see that insight was just so special.
It sure was. So thank you very much to Mira and Eduardo for joining us today on this, the final episode of the season of Normal Not Normal.
It is. And also as well, while we're saying thank you to obviously the guys there for joining us, I can also say a big thank you to everyone who's come on the show to help us out. So thank you so much for making this season so much fun and just being able to learn what your normal is as well. Because I think we've all learnt a lot on this journey of what normal means. And to summarise... James,
no, we have. Hang on.
I have.
No, we haven't.
I have.
We haven't learned anything what normal means.
We have.
All I've decided is that normal is everyone's own interpretation
exactly.
of it. But all the guests that we've had on, their normal is they've always kept going, even when things have got a bit challenging. They've kept going and gone on to do amazing things. So can I say that the best normal to have is keep going.
That's what I say from everything else, like just thinking of what so many of the guys have told us throughout the whole show, like setbacks, what they've come through and stuff like that. Yet they've been able to just either use that as fuel or ride it until it gets to a better situation in their lives as well. And just keep going with it and just keep adapting. Like I remember when we were chatting with Alfie, how he just casually dropped in. Yeah, you know, I was on a pilot and then didn't get picked up for the main season. But Alfie being Alfie, just like, yeah, you know, it's all right. And that, but again, like you, some people could take that negative as such a massive personal thing. But yeah, it was just, okay, I'm just going to keep going. And then next thing you know, he's starring in a major TV series at the end of it. And it's just having that drive to keep going. And I think the good thing that I've really, really enjoyed as well from all the people we've been able to speak to on the show, including the listener participation stuff as well that we've been doing, is just the complete diversity in people who we've been able to speak to, because that just shows that although people have got so many different things going on and so many different interests, that at the end of the day, we're all still people, aren't we? And we all still have that emotion to be ourselves.
When we spoke to Seven Colour Suzuki, I know you and I have both changed the way that we've done certain things, and we've made sure that we do more recycling, and you even changed to an electric car,
yeah.
And all this kind
I
of
bought,
stuff.
So I bought an electric car on the back of it, yeah.
So it's literally changed that, and seeing the impact that it's made on our lives in for the better, I think, has been great. Nadi Hussein, who's possibly added an extra couple of kilos to my waistline because her food is that good. Paula Dupree-Pesman, we knew that the episode with Paula would go down well, and I'm so glad that it did because she is such an amazing person. And if you haven't heard that episode already, I thoroughly recommend to go back and listen to it, because her journey of getting into productions and then basically leaving to go on to do something even cooler and even better, which is, again, just mind-blowing. And there are so many stories from everybody that we spoke to, and I'm so grateful for them to coming on and giving us their time to answer our silly questions, tell us their stories, and hopefully inspire some guys that have been listening to.
I suppose just something that's come out of nowhere. Well, we didn't certainly see this happening. Was just the community were built up around the whole Normal Not Normal listenership. Like we see James and I see the responses and the interactions that you guys have with each other in terms of the supportiveness for each other. Like, and I think one of the really sweet and uplifting things for me, what I see, is how there's some people who'd be listening to it and saying, oh, you know, I'm just taking a break from my finals, but listening to this is my nice escape from it. And just seeing one person reply to that person saying, good luck on your final, is absolutely amazing. And that is the thing that I think of everything that we've done on this season, that is some of the best feedback I think that you can have, is that where it's not necessarily directed at us, but it's just showing that other people are supporting each other. That is really special, guys. So I'm so glad to think we've been able to be part of that and just be on that journey with you. and all the other stuff that's come on the back of it, be it the odd rant. I know that there's some people who, no doubt, if they ever see me in a mall or anything like that, if they're in front of me at the till, will probably want to go behind me in case they're at the self-checkout. Or it happened the other day. I get to the till, right? Why do people get to a till and then say they've unloaded all their shopping? Oh, hang on, let me just go. I forgot something. Let me just go off. And then go right back to the end of the line. The lady has already finished scanning all the rest of the food through, and she comes back with a toothbrush, a single disposable toothbrush. And I'm thinking, you didn't think of that at the time?
If you need a toothbrush, there you go.
Oh, yeah, okay. So it's all right for me to just wait for 15 minutes then, twiddling my thumbs.
Yeah, it is.
Do you know what I mean?
So I'd like to go on to the final Did You Knows of the season.
Ooh.
So I thought a couple of art-based ones would be great. So, going with Eduardo, who's from Brazil, many of the numerous rock shelters in the Sierra de Capoeira National Park, I hope I pronounced that correctly, are decorated with cave paintings, and some of these cave paintings are over 25,000 years old, proving that they are one of the oldest communities in South America were there in Brazil. So if you're in Brazil, I ever get the chance to visit there, go check it out. Going back to, so I'm going to combine last week's episode and this week's episode. So Holly, who is in the Paralympics, obviously we learned that Paralympics runs alongside the Olympics. And today we had great artist Mina Lima. So did you know, between 1912 and 1948, art competitions used to be part of the Olympics, where there were medals awarded. Yep, where there are medals awarded for best painting, best sculpture, architecture, music, and literature.
Hang on. So you could get an Olympic medal for that, yet they've never had darts in the Olympics.
There you go.
I think that just shows everything wrong with sport.
Well, it's not anymore, is it? I'm saying it was. We're talking 1948 was the last one.
To be fair, actually, didn't they used to have a three-legged race in the Olympics?
Probably.
Very good there. So, guys, anyway, we want to say a massive thank you. And I thought I'd say bye, James. You know, as we normally say in different languages. I thought I'd say bye in a couple of languages now, so... Adios, aloha, ciao, sayonara, au revoir, cheerio, or as we say where we come from, tarara bit.
I just want to say au revoir. I like that one. And also before we go as well, I'd just like to say a huge thank you to David and Alice. Alice has been the behind the scenes working very hard during this whole season to make sure this all sounds correct and cutting out all our mistakes. So thank you very much for putting up with all our rambling and everything else, Alice. It's thoroughly appreciated. But guys, for the final time this season, I'm James Phelps.
And I'm Oliver Phelps. Guys, stay safe and we'll see you very soon.
Bye-bye. Normal, Not Normal is a Stable production.